So welcome, everyone. As you can see on the screen, you're going to hear from the Microsoft Surface support team. That's actually us. Real quick before we get going, how many of you guys have Surfaces? Awesome. How many of you guys have ever read about problems with Surfaces? Yeah, that's what we thought. So what we're here to talk to you about today, and we'll get into this a little more in a moment, but we're going to talk to you about how to avoid a lot of those pitfalls and those problems that you read about, some of the best practices you can leverage. And to kind of kick things off and introduce us, we actually come from support. So when customers like yourselves have a problem with our products, you pick up the phone and you call Microsoft, it's our teams who answer the phone. My name is David. This gentleman here with the beard is Todd. And that gentleman there is Scott. Scott and I are what we call supportability program managers. And our role is to sort of take the big picture of all of those support calls and come back to the product team to try to make the product better, whether that's fixing problems that customers are having today or saying, hey, how can we make the next version of the product better for the future? So that's what we do. Todd here actually works directly with our support engineering teams to make sure that we're doing the right things for customers today. So customer calls in, says, hey, I can't get my Wi-Fi working. If it's something that we can't figure out, Todd gets involved, we do whatever needs to be done, we get the customer up and running. That's what we do. Now, because we're from support, we tend to deal in cold, hard reality. We don't sugarcoat things. We're going to be very transparent with you guys today. We're going to be very frank with you about some of the problems that customers have faced. But we're also going to tell it like it is. And the truth is that it's not really as bad as a lot of people think. There's some very simple things that you can do to prevent yourself from running into problems in your environment, whether you have 10 surfaces or 1,000 of them. So we're going to talk through a lot of that stuff today. Now, before I get going, we have a lot of different subjects we want to talk with you guys about. We brought a lot of information, and truthfully, we're probably not going to have enough time. So what we'd like to get you all to do, if you have a question, hold that question until the end. If we get time at the end of this presentation, we'll take questions up here. If we don't get time, or even if you just have a question later, come find us at the Windows Devices booth down on the expo floor. We're going to be there all afternoon. We're going to be there all week. Yep. So if you guys have a question at any point, just come walk up to us, ask your question. We'll answer it as best we can.
Yeah, just look for the area where the coffee machine is, and we'll be on the Surface Hubs right next to that.
Yeah, that's how you know we work in support. We all hang out by the coffee machine.
And there'll be donuts there all afternoon, too, I think.
All right. So really quick, I think you guys are probably all familiar with our devices portfolio. But when we talk about Surface, we're not just talking about Surface Pro 4. We're not just talking about Surface Book. We talk about the whole portfolio. And the way I think of it is, if you're a business, you have a set of things that your users need to do. And you want to choose the right device for those users. So maybe your users are the type of users who need to walk around a lot. Maybe they need to be very mobile. Well, tablet's a good idea for those guys, right? Maybe they don't need to be so mobile. Maybe they spend a lot of their time at a desk and they just need to go to meetings and things. Maybe the laptop form factor is better. The point is that we have an entire portfolio of devices available to help increase the productivity of your users. We have all of these on display in the expo floor, so please come down, take a look, play with them, get your hands on them, see what you think. I can tell you from years of working in IT that arming your users with the right device for what they're doing is the first step to making sure that you're successful. All right, so before I get into the agenda, I want to do a little bit of an introduction for the three of us. I know I talked through what we do a minute ago, but again, my name is David Beach, for everybody just walking in. I'm a supportability program manager working with the support team and with the Surface team. So I focus entirely on Surface devices. And that's everything from our old Surface devices to the current ones, even up to Surface Hub. As part of what I do, I have to deal with Windows as well. So before we go any further, we're going to be very clear with you guys. At the end of the day, Surface, the hardware, is a PC that runs Windows. A lot of the problems that we solve are actually things where Windows is not necessarily working with the hardware as well as it should be. And sometimes the fix is on the Surface side, sometimes the fix is on the Windows side. So there's a lot of Windows troubleshooting that goes into Surface. I've been with Microsoft for 14 years. I started off as a support engineer on the phones, supporting customers like you guys. Prior to that, I was in corporate IT. I was a consultant working with customers big and small. Been doing a lot of things. I actually got my start doing Active Directory deployments in 2000, literally the year 2000. These guys have been at it even longer than I am. So Todd, could you talk a little about what you do?
Yeah, so hey, I work in, I've worked at Microsoft for over 20 years. I've worked there long enough to know the guy in the orange shirt right there. He used to work with me and Scott in Charlotte. The team I work on, we troubleshoot customer issues and help customers solve problems with Surface for businesses. So if you're a premier customer, you're a business customer that has a Surface issue, and you call in for support, then there's a really good chance that you're working with somebody on my team or potentially even with me. And I'll let you.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. My name is Scott, and I've been working at Microsoft for 24 years. I started out with supporting MS-DOS, so a long time ago. And I've supported...
And Windows 3.1.
Windows 3.1, Novell NetWare, Banyan Vine, all that stuff, Windows 4 groups. And so I've supported Windows pretty much my entire career at Microsoft.
We have a picture of a dinosaur on his office door.
Yeah. But then, you know, when Surface came out, I switched over to devices. So I focused on Surface. I do some stuff with Surface Hub and also client deployment also with Windows.
All right. So the agenda for today, we're gonna go fast, and that's just because we have a lot that we want to cover. And again, if you have a question, let's hold that question till the end. We'll try to answer it here. If we can't answer it here, come down and find us on the expo floor this afternoon. We'll be happy to talk all you want about any of the questions you have. And you can ask us about any Microsoft product. We may not know the answer ourselves, but we will help you find the answer. We'll help you get you to the right place to get that answer. So first up, Scott is going to talk about power management, which is actually kind of a big deal for mobile devices. We want to get the most out of those batteries, so Scott's going to talk through that. Yeah. After that, Todd is going to take us through dock and display issues and wireless networking issues. And Todd, I think you're covering touch and pin as well.
Yep.
And then we're going to come back to Scott for Surface deployment. And if we have time, we'll talk about thermal issues as well. So we're going to go through a lot of material. I'm sorry, we're going to go really fast. Again, questions at the end, please. So this is the session objective slide. If you guys have been to a breakout, you've seen this. But our goal here, ultimately, is to arm you with information. We want you to walk out of this session able to take something back to your day jobs and think about how do you avoid these problems? How do you do a better job of making it so your users don't have to call you? Because we're all in IT, right? We don't want our users to have to call us. That's a bad idea.
Yeah, we want you to love your Surface because I love mine.
All right, and just before we get into power, one last thing I want to say is that your feedback is really, really important. The Surface team within Microsoft is kind of unique. They're very connected with their customers, to the point where the individual developers and PMs get on the phone with customers on a regular basis just to hear their feedback about the devices. How can we make the devices better? What kinds of challenges are you having? You know, what sort of tools do you need to manage these things effectively? So your feedback is super important to us. All week this week, we're going to be here. We're happy to take that feedback here. But you can also go out on our answers forum and you can post your feedback. If you know an MVP, if you know a Microsoft MVP, you can get feedback to us that way. And then finally, if you have a technical issue with a Surface device or even with Windows, you don't have to go it alone. We have a support team that operates 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can call us. A lot of times that support actually ends up being free. And we will work through your issue. We will help you troubleshoot. We'll help you get to the root cause, and we'll try to get you up and running, whatever that problem is, whether that's a bug in Windows, whether it's a weird behavior that you're seeing that you just need to understand, that's what support is here to do. To help you get to support, we have a couple slides here. I'm not going to spend too much time on these. The place to go is support.microsoft.com. You'll see that there's a section for business. So I think most of you guys are probably in business environments. You want to go there, and that gets you to the commercial support team, which Todd is from, which will get you to the right people to help answer your question.
Yep. And there's the URLs, basically, that get you directly to it. So the one, for those of you that work with businesses, go to that second link, and that'll get you to where you can open a case, you can look for our known issues, you can get links to the forums for business customers.
All right, so do you want to talk about updates real quick?
Sure.
You guys do? I can cover it.
Go ahead.
Okay. So, so one of the key things that we see a lot in support with Surface is a lot of customers are on older drivers, older firmwares, and things like that. And with Surface, you know, we engineered Surface so that we can fix things in software, which is great. We're not necessarily limited by a chip as much as some other devices are, depending on how they're built. We can fix a lot in software. We can fix it in firmware. We can fix it in drivers. And so, one of the things that myself and my team see on a regular basis is we'll be working with a customer. We'll get data from one of their devices, and they're running a Surface Pro 3, and they've got the firmware that was from April of 2015, and they're running all the drivers and everything from a long time ago. And, we always want to recommend to customers to try the latest drivers and firmwares first if you've got an issue. That's our first step. We have a web page that lists, it's got pictures of all of the devices, and you can go there as the update history. It tells you about every version of driver and firmware, what we fixed in it. And we've got information up on our IT Pro blog that gives you details on that information as well. On the IT Pro blog, there's actually a link where you can sign up for an email bulletin. So every time we push something to the IT Pro blog, you'll get an email that'll tell you everything about that release, what was in the drivers, what was fixed, all that good stuff. So, I can't say it enough, install updates, because it fixes a lot of problems.
And just a quick show of hands, how many of you guys are managing multiple devices in your environments? Quite a few, right? And probably having your users go to Windows Update individually is not the most efficient way to handle that. It's likely that you have System Center or you have something else deployed to help you manage those updates. To make it easy for you to get updates to Surface devices, every time we do a major update for Surface, so every time we push new firmware or push new drivers out to Windows Update, we also release an MSI file on our download center. That MSI file will install the latest firmware and drivers on the corresponding Surface device. So if you're managing multiple machines and you want to make sure that all those machines are up to date, what you should do is go get that MSI, use whatever technology you use to push that out to everybody, and that way you can be sure that those devices are actually up to date when that call comes into your help desk.
Yep. And so there's standard MSI files, so all the command line switches apply. You can run them without a reboot, so that you can just leave it in a pause state and then issue a reboot later on your devices. You can run them silently so the user doesn't see any of the UI, all the switches for a normal MSI will apply to that at work. Yeah.
All right, cool. Scott, you're up.
Okay. All right, so the first section we're going to go into is power. So one thing about power on Surface is that since it's a connected standby device, you're not going to see as many power options in the settings. And the reason we do that is that we want to let Windows manage that. We feel like Windows is going to do the best job managing the power. The devices, when they ship, they come with a balanced plan, and that's the default. And we have made some changes compared with Windows 8.1. In Windows 8.1, we had a lot of requests for, I want to be able to change when the display goes off versus when I go to sleep. And so with Windows 10, we enabled that functionality, so you can choose set different timeouts for that. Also, in Windows 8.1, the Hibernate setting, you couldn't configure, and now with Windows 10, you can set that to whatever you want. Also, with Windows 10, we have what's called Modern Connected Standby, and with that new feature, we now have an option. It's on the lower right here where it says network connection on battery power, stay connected network while asleep. If you want to turn that off, you do have an option now for that. And I also, I show here what the balance plan, the default is, which is 5 and 10 minutes. And then the Hibernate option, you can set a timeout while you're on AC or DC. So, I have a separate theater session in the device booth where we're going to really dig into more power settings. So if you want to come see that, just look for my name under the speaker list.
5 o'clock today.
5:05. Thanks. Yeah. Todd knows when it is. One thing about with power settings, what we see is if you're deploying a custom image, you're deploying Windows 10 Enterprise to Surface. Want to make sure that you think about the hibernation timeout. You can set that to any value you want, 2 hours, 4 hours. When you deploy Windows 10 Enterprise image, it's going to default to not be enabled. So You can change that with a Power CFG script. You can just set that timeout to whatever threshold kind of fits your user's use of the device. One thing what we do see Todd sees in support is a lot of older scripts that were written for older versions of Windows or older devices, basically not connected standby machines. And a lot of times those scripts configure a lot of power settings that really don't apply to connected standby. And at minimum, it's a setting that it's probably gonna get ignored, but at worst, it may actually cause a problem with the power management on the device. So we just recommend that you look at those scripts and realize that all the Surface devices are connected standby capable machines.
And it may take you a while to hunt down the script if it's been in your environment for a really long time. I've worked with a couple customers that took them weeks to figure out where that was getting set, and you know they figured it out eventually.
Yeah.
And usually it's a byproduct. Most of the scripts are a byproduct of people trying to tweak and adjust their power settings on desktop systems years ago. Like, hey, I don't want my net card to wake up my device if it goes to sleep, or I want my net card to never go to sleep, or I want this, or I want that. And a lot of them are a combination of registry keys and things. And yeah, basically, if you're setting registry keys that there's no knob in Windows on a Surface to set, technically you're dealing in a scenario that you just, it's going to be unexpected what behavior you're going to see. And that's what we've seen. We've seen issues coming out of sleep where the wireless doesn't work or the networking didn't work. And that was due to some registry keys that are very old and have been around since the Windows 2000, Windows XP timeframe. And you know, I challenged customers to go find where it came from. And yeah, like I said, it took a couple of them a few weeks. So one of our recommendations with that kind of stuff is if you're testing surfaces and you're trying out from scratch, create a separate OU in your domain and join your surfaces into that, you know, and then start adding in the policies that you use inside your environment. That'll help you kind of slowly build into administering the surface like you would your older laptop. And then if you add in some settings, oh, okay, that causes this side effect, okay, you can back it out. Yeah.
Okay. So some battery information at the bottom of this slide here, you can see that theater session we were talking about, the 3068. In Windows 10, we, you know, similar to like phones, Android, Windows Phone, we now you can go in and see what apps are consuming the most battery on the device. So you can use that to troubleshoot, what's consuming the battery. If you want to get really detailed information about the battery on the device, there's a PowerCFG/battery report, and that will show you the type of battery, how much it's charging, what's its full capacity, and so on. For troubleshooting battery issues, there's a couple other commands that you want to be aware of. PowerCFG energy, that's kind of just a general log file that will look at your system, and if it sees any red flags about what it's negatively going to impact power, it points those out to you. We also have PowerCFG sleep study, and that is detailed information about when your device goes into a connected standby or CS session. We also have a newer switch, the SRUM Util, and that's energy estimation engine, and that just shows you more detailed information about applications, how much battery that they're consuming, and there's a link there for a video where the developer who worked on that feature, he goes through and explains how to interpret those logs. Most of these logs, I would say, are geared for IT professionals, not really geared for consumer, but the battery report is a good thing. If you just want to see what your average battery life is, you can pull that out of there and it will tell you.
So I think we can't emphasize enough how important some of these tools are. One of the questions that we get asked all the time is hey, I only get so many hours of battery life out of my device. What's wrong with it? Why is my device so terrible on battery? We have to understand a battery is like a gas tank in your car. So if you're in your car and you only get so many gallons in that gas tank, the way that you drive your car influences how much mileage you're gonna get per gallon. If you're constantly flooring that accelerator, if you're keeping it in low gear all the time, you're gonna burn gas faster. It's the same with a computer, it's the same with the Surface device. If you're spinning the CPU hard, if you're spinning the disk hard, you're gonna drain battery faster. So when you want to optimize battery performance on surfaces to get the best life out of the device, to get the best use out of it, you need to start looking at what are my users doing with that surface. It's just like working with a server where you do a performance baseline on a server, and then over time you track your performance against that baseline. You want to do the same thing with your tablets. You want to baseline your battery usage. Hey, here's what a normal workday looks like. Here's what I can expect. And when a user comes to you and says, I'm only getting 4 hours of battery, you can say, OK, what are you doing different from that baseline? And you can use these tools to see that. You can see which applications are draining the battery. You can still use your standard Windows performance tools, too. You can use Windows Performance Monitor. You can use Windows Reliability Monitor. You can say, hey, when is the device going to sleep? When is it waking up? Is it actually hibernating like it's supposed to? A lot of different things come into play here. These tools will get you to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
One item here I want to talk about briefly is if you haven't seen in the press, there's an issue about Surface Pro 3 battery issue. And basically, what would happen here is on a very small number of devices, Surface Pro 3s, the device wouldn't hold a charge, and if you ran a battery report on it, it would say capacity 40,000 kilowatts, and it was showing maximum 165 or something, very low number. And we started to see reports of that issue. We worked with the Surface team, the product team. They went in. We actually sent a number of devices out to Redmond, had them take a look at it, and they determined that it was something we could fix in software, which is great, where we wouldn't have to replace hardware here. And so what we did is we released a system firmware update that fixes the issue. And there's a link there that has basically a FAQ about the issue and more information about getting the update and so on.
So I think it's actually important, go back to something that we said earlier on. We've designed Surface devices to where we're able to correct a lot of problems through software. So this issue here was actually caused by a flaw in logic. It was truly a software problem. And because we designed it in such a way that we could address that, we were able to create that firmware update and recover devices that were in a bad state out in the field. I don't have the exact numbers, but when we looked at telemetry, within a week of deploying that update, fully half of the devices out there in the world that were impacted by this problem had recovered back to their normal full capacity. The ones that hadn't yet were just waiting to get that update. So really important to keep your machines up to date. One of the things that we try to do whenever we can is actually issue the updates before people experience the problem. I would much rather give you an update before you know that you need it, so that it's like a vaccine, so that you never actually have the problem that we're fixing. So again, important to keep your machines up to date.
Yeah, we also ask, opting in when possible for that telemetry is really helps us out, because we're able to see issues before they actually become a problem, and it gives us a lot of information so that we can kind of proactively fix issues. So it helps us out a lot to have that telemetry data.
Cool. All right, let's talk about dock and display. So a lot of people raised their hands and said they have Surfaces. How many of you use the new Surface dock with yours? Okay. How many of you use the old Surface Pro 3 dock, the one you kind of snap? Okay. So most of you are on the big one. Okay. So what?
How many use pluggable?
Yeah, okay. That's a great question. Actually, how many of you use something else, like a display link-based dock? Okay. So, our newest dock now, right, is the Surface dock, and it's going to work with the Surface Pro 3, the Surface Pro 4, and the Book. The old dock, the snap-in one, you can use it with a Pro 4 if you want to. It was built during the Pro 3 era, but we do have a plastic shim that you can pick up at the Microsoft Store or on our website. You can ask for one, and they'll ship it to you, and then that allows you to put a Pro 4 in the clickable dock. But most of our customers now use the new dock. And so, one of the things that people saw a lot of issues with on the dock early on was with DisplayPort output, because the dock itself has two DisplayPort outputs on the actual dock. And the way that works is it's just a DisplayPort hub. So if you're familiar with StarTAC or Excel, they make these adapters where, you know, it plugs in one end of it's a mini display port, on the other end is two connections. You know, it's splitting that. It's creating what's called an MST connection, a multi-stream transport, and that allows it to send multiple signals out, you know, to control multiple monitors. And so so our dock has two of those ports. Because of a lot of interesting issues that we uncovered early on with that device on Book Pro 4 and Pro 3, a lot of interesting monitoring compatibilities, we issued a firmware update for the DisplayPort portion of the chip inside that Surface Dock. And so we install it two ways. One, if you don't use Windows Update and you're using WSUS or System Center, you can use what's called the Microsoft Dock Updater tool to do it. You can install it on one machine and update all your docks manually. You know, just plug them all in and it'll tell you whether they're up to date or not. In the tool, it tells you this dock needs a firmware update or it doesn't, and you can go through and update them all. Or if they get the update installed through Windows Update, then in the background, it'll silently do it. It takes several cycles of connecting and disconnecting and for it to process through the steps, and it'll eventually update the firmware on that in the back. The new style dock. That is for the new dock, yes. Yeah, the old dock did not have any firmware updates. Yep. And so along with those issues, another thing we see quite a bit of are cables and adapter issues. I can't say this enough. You know, the slide has a bunch of stuff on here that you can read, but I'll say it as simple as I can. Not all cables and adapters are created equal. It is just, you would not believe how many issues are solved with cable problems. I mean, I've seen emails from coworkers at Microsoft screaming about their Surface Book and their Surface Dock, and I hate this thing, and you know, I'm getting flash and screen and all this, and somebody says, hey, go to the Microsoft webpage where we list the cables and adapters that we've tested, buy two of those DisplayPort cables from Cable Matters or one of the other vendors we recommend. They cost $10 each, and then they respond back and they say, I'm very embarrassed, I'm sorry, I fixed my problem with the cable. So I can't say it enough.
I'll interrupt you there. So yeah. Anybody in the room have an electrical engineering background? No, I don't either. And I'm a software guy. I've always been a software guy. I think most of us in the room are probably software people, right? We deal with programs and applications and servers and things like that. Video issues and dock issues are all about electrical current. And this was the hardest thing for us internally at Microsoft to kind of wrap our heads around when we put out these devices. And that's why the cable matters so much. That's why the adapter matters so much, because we're talking in terms like resistance. How much resistance do you have in that cable? How much signal can you pass through it? So we can't emphasize enough. It's really, really important to make sure that you're using the highest possible quality cabling, adapters, whatever in your environment. That's going to get you the best performance.
And you know, you're going to have, two cables, you're going to look at them and they're going to look just as good, right? They're going to look just as awesome. You know, the manufacturer may have a cool little, you know, finish on them, and you really don't know, you know, until you try them out. We see the same thing actually with USB cables. So the Surface 3 device, the 10-inch device we sell, you know, charges through a micro USB cable. We ship a cable with that device that has a very low resistance on that cable. And, you know, believe it or not, if you go out and try cables from other cell phone manufacturers or GPSs or portable MP3 players, we've tested a lot of those, and some of them had double the resistance level compared to the one we shipped, which basically translates to it would take almost 2 hours longer to charge a Surface 3 using a cable from one of these consumer electronic devices. So, and yet the cables looked identical. They were just as thick, they looked just as nice, the connectors looked just the same, but there was a huge difference between that. And that's why we highly recommend, you know, charging the Surface 3 with our cable. So yeah, cables matter, it's a big deal. So if you're having any issues and you're using that dock, you know, try different cables. Our highest recommendation would be to use DisplayPort cables if at all possible. So if your monitor has a DisplayPort input, use the DisplayPort input. If your monitor does not have DisplayPort input, then use a mini DisplayPort to HDMI or DVI adapter, depending on what your monitor has. Passive adapters should work in most theories, in most scenarios, but we've also have noticed some monitors, for whatever reason, only work well with an active adapter. And basically, you know, if it doesn't say active in the description, it's not an active adapter. So, and there's a huge difference in price. And, you know, an active one's gonna be closer to $20 US versus a passive one could be less than $10. And so, yeah, so the web page that we have here, hit seven. So this web, yeah, this is the web page that URL I was showing you earlier went to, and it's got, yes, as you can see here, we've got some monitors that we list out that aren't supported. We've got monitors that we've tested out. Some of these have firmware revisions as well. So as some of you may be aware of Dell monitors, they'll have like an A01, an A02, an A03. Some models of different monitors work well with certain hardware revisions and some don't. And if you're still under warranty, you can call Dell and say, hey, you know, I'm having this problem with this model that has the A01. And they'll tell you, yeah, that's fixed in the A03. Send it back. We'll swap it. A couple of the monitor manufacturers can firmware update. And then, yeah, here's where we talk about the active adapters. And we have links to some of the active adapters for HDMI and DVI. And we also have up here at the top, we have the cables, the DisplayPort cables. Another big thing to keep in mind is if you have a 4K screen, if you have a monitor that's capable of doing a resolution higher than 1920 by 1080, you actually have to use an active adapter. If you got away with it before, then you had a computer or an adapter that was not following spec. But if it's following spec, if you have a display that's higher than 1920 by 1080, you have to use an active adapter, or what's called a passive type 2 adapter. Basically, none of those exist. Most passive adapters are they're type 1. So yeah, if you've got a 4K screen and you can't hook up a DisplayPort cable and you've got to use an HDMI with an adapter, you've got to get a 4K adapter, 4K active adapter. Otherwise, what you'll see is your display will just only it'll literally in Windows will only let you choose, you know, 1920 by 1080 as your highest resolution. You won't be able to choose, you know, the 3000, you know, 3000 and something by 2000. So, another common topic for displays is display scaling or DPI discussion. So, one of the things to keep in mind with monitors and surfaces, you know, high DPI aware devices like Surface and some of the other manufacturers that make, you know, they make screens that have very high resolutions. You can encounter what we call scaling issues or application scaling issues within Windows with specific applications. Typically when you're using that high resolution device with a low resolution monitor. So, you know, the example would be you've got a Surface Book with 3000 by 2000 resolution, and you've got an old DVI monitor sitting next to it that does, you know, 1920 by 1080 or even, you know, 1600 by 1200 or something like that. When you're running the applications, depending on how the application was written, what APIs it was written to, how long ago it was created, largely drives that. When you move that application between your high-res screen, your low-res screen, you're going to see sometimes you're not going to like it. It's going to look too large for you. On one screen, you're gonna, you know, like, whoa, this is huge. The fonts are gigantic, and it's because of the way the application worked. Some applications that don't handle very well getting swapped between a low res and a high res screen, you can work around that a little bit. So let's say I'm on my book and I'm just using it, and then I go into my office and I plug in my dock, and I've got these old low resolution monitors, and then all my apps kind of look out of whack. One way that you can help with that a little bit is to log out of Windows and log back in, because it'll correct the scaling based on the fact that you've got the high-res screen plus the low-res screens. In Windows 10 Anniversary Edition, we added some new APIs that applications can take advantage of to leverage scaling issues. Again, the apps have to write to those APIs, but you know, that's we expect some vendors to start doing that soon. And we have a lot of information on the two blogs that are in this link here on display scaling. It goes over a lot of stuff in depth. There's actually a theater session as well on monitor and scaling issues down on the floor. One of them was earlier today, and the other one, I believe, is Wednesday afternoon down in the devices area. And they go into extreme detail about all this stuff on the display scaling.
Yeah, we'll say, you know, this is a question we get asked constantly because, yeah. You know, when you have an application that is not correctly handling DPI transitions, it's a terrible user experience. And even within Microsoft, some of our own applications have this problem.
Yep.
Yeah, we're extremely aware of it.
We're very aware, I mean, I use a 4K monitor at home, and probably I will at work here soon because, you know, it makes it work easier for me. Yeah, you know, so 4K and 4K, and the prices are coming down. I mean, you know, a 24-inch Dell 4K screen is like $50-$75, you know, above the ultra-sharp, you know, standard 1080p screen. I mean, the prices are continuing to drop. And so, yeah, we highly recommend if you're buying new hardware, buy 4K screens when you're buying your high-res devices, because you're going to, whether you're buying a Surface or you're not buying a Surface, you're going to, most devices, laptops are all high-res these days, and this it makes it a lot easier on you. But yeah, we can talk about this topic the entire time we're in here.
Let me say this. I know a lot of you guys, and let's save questions till the end, please. I know a lot of you guys are concerned about this because it is a very bad user experience. What I can tell you is that across Microsoft, we have a commitment to improve this user experience for our customers. That's not only the Surface team, it's not only Windows, but that's our application teams, that's Office. Every product within Microsoft is working on this problem. And you're going to see over time, as we get updates out, as we get new versions out, you're going to see this get better. The other thing that we're doing is we're also reaching out to our developers to say, hey, what can we do to enable the Adobes of the world to make their experience better as well? What can we do to make those other applications better, the ones that Microsoft doesn't own? At the end of the day, one of the best things about Microsoft and the best things about Windows is that you can take an application you've been using for years and you can keep using that. But that only holds true so long as we can provide a good user experience with that application. So we're trying to enable that for everyone.
Cool. So let's talk about wireless. So the big one that I get asked probably the most about now is wireless display or Miracast. When the Surface Pro 3 first came out, I spent a lot of time working with customers with wireless in general, incompatibilities with routers and access points and things like that. Honestly, that actually works pretty well these days. Our driver is very rock solid. You know, I'm not, you know, obviously there could be some anomaly, you know, where, you know, Cisco updates their firmware, a particular access point exposes an interesting issue. You're always going to have those kind of things. But in general, the driver works really well. But one of the things that comes up a lot is wireless display. And, you know, if you've been on the expo floor, a lot of people are using wireless display, right? One of the things that is the biggest problem area for wireless display is going to be interference. I was here at this conference center for the Convergys conference 2.5 years ago, and because of the interference on the expo floor, I could not use wireless display. I had to be basically about 3 feet from the adapter that was plugged up to the television and my Surface, because there was just so much interference in the room from all the vendors that had their own setups. So wireless display is a big thing, but it's going to rely on when you initially connect to your wireless display, it does the initial session over 2.4 gigahertz, and then after that, it can switch from 2.4 to 5 gigahertz. And so if you've got a lot of consumer devices that operate in the 2.4 gigahertz range, which Bluetooth operates in that range, wireless headphones, wireless headsets, chairs that have remote controls, you know, I mean, the amount of stuff you would, you know, in medical offices, just tons of equipment. In schools, tons of equipment. There's a lot of interference. And so, you know, for best results, we recommend that customers connect their device to a 5 gigahertz wireless network, and then that way your wireless display connection will also happen on 5 gigahertz. Another big driver, though, for quality on Miracast is the video driver itself, because this technology is largely driven by Intel. You know, we obviously, as we talked about earlier, recommend you have the latest updates, and so you want to make sure you have the latest video driver for your Surface installed. And also the same thing for your wireless driver. At the bottom, I have a cool little note. For those of you running Windows 10 Anniversary Edition, if you want to play with wireless display and you don't want to go out and buy like a Microsoft wireless display adapter or somebody else's wireless display adapter, you can actually make your computer a wireless display host. So you can, if you want to geek out and show one of your friends something really cool, take two computers to a coffee shop and have Anniversary Edition on at least one of them. And on the one that you have it on, go into settings and set up the option that says, I want to project to this computer. Go to your computer you're working on, choose connect wirelessly to that one, and then extend your desktop so you have a multi-mon setup sitting there using two computers right in front of you, and it's doing it totally wirelessly between the two. It's actually pretty cool.
Something else to add, Miracast is an industry specifications, not specific to Microsoft.
Yep.
That means if you have a phone that's not a Microsoft phone, you can still use that to project to a Windows device,
yep,
as long as that Windows device is running Anniversary Edition or later.
Yep.
And something else to say on the topic of congestion. We get a lot of calls from customers who are starting to try to roll Miracast out to conference rooms or hospitals rolling them out to examination rooms because it's, you know, it just makes sense, right? You know, imagine you're a hospital. You want your doctor to be able to walk in that exam room and project his stuff up on the screen without having to plug up to a cable or anything like that. Same for conference rooms. You want people to be able to walk right into that conference room and get started. They shouldn't have to go figure out which connector to plug into their device. So it just makes sense. The problem is, obviously, when you pack that many things close together, you run into congestion issues. So if your company is thinking about deploying Miracast at a large scale, before you get started, go map out your wireless network. Go look at where are your access points. How many do you have? What does your saturation look like? Do you have other wireless things? Printers, copiers, coffee machines. I mean, anything in the environment that is broadcasting on wireless frequencies can actually cause problems for Miracast transmissions. So before you get started, you need to know your environment. And probably, I'd say, Todd, about 50% of the cases we work, we find that customers haven't done that homework on the front end.
Yeah, it's a lot of interference. They just don't realize that's there in the building.
Yeah, and it costs them a lot of time. So we want to save you guys that time. You know, invest in understanding your environment on the front end before you start trying to deploy this stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, one other thing, too. You want to, you know, if you're in a highly congested area, you want to look at devices that support something called AGO mode.
Yep.
Surface Hub has settings where you can choose different channels.
Control the channel number.
That's what we're doing right now on the Expo 4. Each of those hubs is on a different channel. And so if you have receivers that support that AGO mode, you're going to be able to handle that interference a lot better.
Yep.
The other thing we get asked about a lot on is wireless band and wireless band preference. So as you can see on the screen, there's a setting there that's set in the properties for the Marvell Avistar wireless driver that we use in Surface. The default setting is auto. And what auto means is we're gonna connect to 5 GHz channels if they're available, unless the signal strength for 5 GHz is significantly worse than 2.4. So if you're running your wireless network, you know, your network name is called My Company, and you've got My Company broadcasting on 2.4 gigahertz, and you've got My Company broadcasting on 5 gigahertz. If the 5 gigahertz signal is available and it's not significantly weaker than the 2.4, then we'll connect to 5 gigahertz. But if your company has something like boosters that would boost the 2.4 signal because of byproducts of, you know, a need you had, you know, years past, then you can actually end up in a scenario where 2.4 signal is higher than 5, and when you're in that scenario, you know, the Surface is going to choose 5. And so that's why we added in this option to allow you to manually choose, you know, 2.4 or 5 gigahertz. If you're in an environment where, you know, 2.4 is just always the highest signal strength, then you can set it to do, you know, 5 gigahertz only, and that'll allow you to get that good signal. The other thing, the one caveat is if you set your card to 5 gigahertz only, you won't be able to do Miracast. And so remember earlier I said there's an initial session set up over Miracast, and then there's a secondary connection, which is what we stream the data over. The initial session setup happens on 2.4 gigahertz. That's part of the Miracast specification. So we can't change that. I know that there are some draft RFCs to try to change that, so we can do every bit of it on 5 gigahertz in the future. So that's the only caveat if you had to go set 5 gigahertz only.
And this is something to be very careful with. We tend to recommend this band setting as a troubleshooting scenario. So if you're trying to figure out why is my wireless performance doing what it's doing, and you maybe think that you might have a problem on 2.4 gigahertz or a problem on 5 gigahertz, you want to isolate that problem, that's where we recommend using this setting. As a long-term solution, there's a lot of gotchas with choosing one band over another. So, you know, for long-term success, you really want to be set to auto, but use this to help isolate problems in your environment and troubleshoot those problems. Figure out what do we need to go fix to make the auto setting work properly. You get a better experience for your users doing that.
Yep. The last thing about wireless too, which is again related to interference, a common symptom that we've started to see pop up is somebody will say, you know, when I plug in this USB external hard drive I have into the side of my Surface, my wireless stops working, or the speed, you know, that I get suddenly drops dramatically. And that is usually because of interference. Intel actually has a huge white paper on their website that talks about how USB 3.0 can cause interference in the 2.4 gigahertz wireless range. And they have a whole white paper that talks about how manufacturers should place their chips inside their device for USB and wireless, you know, significantly distance away and shield them properly. And so that is something that sometimes comes up. Usually it comes up more in Europe. So how many people in here live in Europe? Okay. So there was a law change at the beginning of 2015 that requires all devices that be sold in Europe, they have to use an aggressive algorithm to basically stop communicating on wireless if they deem that there is other traffic in the area that they could interfere with. And so if you plug in a device that causes a large amount of interference in the 2.4 gigahertz range, and you're connected to a network on 2.4 gigahertz, you may have a very poor wireless experience. And the only workaround for that would be to use 5 gigahertz, unfortunately.
Yeah, and this is a difficult area because in the world of USB peripherals, those hard drives or cameras or anything else that you plug in via USB, there are thousands of companies making this device or these devices. And while there is a standard that they're supposed to follow, that standard is followed very loosely, and not everybody shields their devices in the same way or constructs them in the same way. So trying to ask that manufacturer to go change his little $50 USB device to not interfere with your wireless, probably not going to really happen. I mean, we'd love it if they did, because then everybody would work well together. But it's just, the reality is that you're probably looking at how do we move everybody to 5 gigahertz in our environment to get around that.
Yep. So touch and pan. So one of the things we get a lot from people now that they want to, you know, plug into a dock and they want to use their Surface device, you know, go in and out of their office, they want to be able to come in their office. I don't want to use the screen on my Surface, right? I want to close the lid. I'm going to set Windows power settings to do nothing when I close the lid. But I want to plug up to my dock, and I want to have my monitors, and you know, I want to use a separate keyboard and a separate mouse. On a Surface Pro 3, when the lid closed, obviously Windows would control whether it went to sleep or not, but when you closed the lid on Surface Pro 3, the screen would still stay on. So it would still be active as a screen. You know, so if you went into your monitor settings and you had two external monitors plus your Surface, you would still see three screens. And so you could go in and disable the Surface screen, you know, at that moment, so that when you were docked, you know, it would disable it. I don't know why my thing keeps cutting in and out. On a Pro 4 and a book, what we do is when you close the lid, we do two new things. One, we actually shut off the display on the book and the Pro 4. So if you're configured, you know, you've got your Surface Book screen open, you've got two more monitors, and you close the lid, as soon as you close that lid, that monitor will, on the Surface, the screen will be off, and your mouse will now only go between two screens. You open it back up, and now your mouse goes across all three. The other thing we do is we turn off touch when the lid is closed. We do it on Pro 4 and Book. Not so necessary on the Book because the keyboard on the Book and the screen have a gap there. But on a Pro 4, the chiclet keyboard, you know, is touching on the screen, and so if you're moving your Pro 4 around on your desk and you've got it closed, you could inadvertently cause a touch on your screen because it's pressed together, and so that's why we turned off touch when the lid was closed. Another thing with touch, we had some issues in the past that are resolved now with ghosting or phantom touch, where you would see, you know, your screen would look like somebody was touching it, you know, and yet you're not touching the screen. You would see circles, you know, and dots. And we issued some firmware releases for Pro 4 and Book and Surface 3 that fixed those issues. But some customers will still encounter ghost touching occasionally, and sometimes that can be caused by electromagnetic interference. So if you've got a tube TV, you know, a very old one, you set a touch device next to it, doesn't even matter whether it's a Surface or somebody else's device, you're probably going to see ghost touching on your screen. because it just causes interference. We've seen interference caused by other interesting cabling that runs nearby devices or runs under a desk in a conference room. We had a customer who had they admitted they had 50, 60 cables running underneath their table, and if they put their device right on it, they would get ghost touching, and if they picked it up like 6 inches, the ghost touching would go away. And so, they actually had the same problem with other laptops as well, so they made the choice to rewire the room. Also, sometimes with touch, altitude and temperature extremes can cause a little bit of differences because most devices have an on-the-fly calibration for touch, and some of the inputs it takes in are related to humidity and temperature.
If anybody's interested in hearing more about how touch works and why these problems happen, come find us on the expo floor later. We can get kind of deep into the theory here. The bottom line is when you're dealing with a touch issue, one of the common troubleshooting things that you should try is, hey, let me take the device to another room and see whether the issue still occurs.
Yep. Last thing here on pen. So we have two different pens for the Pro 3, the Pro 4, the Book. The Pro 3 and the Surface 3, era, we had a pen which was a round pen. So the entire pen was round all the way around, and it had two buttons on it, as you can see, in the picture here. So there were two individual buttons on it. The newer one is the one that has the flat edge, which has kind of a button built into the flat edge. And each of those are different in how they work. A common question we used to get with the round pen, the Surface Pro 3, Surface 3 pen, was, hey, my button stopped working on the pen, or, if I hold it up to the screen, it doesn't work anymore. And a lot of times it was just because the battery had died. Well, the catch on that device is that there's actually two batteries. So there is a quad A battery, and there's a coin size battery. The quad A battery would drive the part of the pen that's down here. At this part, it's the tip of the pen and the buttons. The coin battery would drive this little button up here, which is actually a Bluetooth device. So when you press that, it's a Bluetooth command that tells Windows to take an action. Windows defaulted to opening OneNote, but you could tweak that to do whatever you wanted. So if you've got issues with the pen, you need to make sure you change both the batteries. On the Pro 4 and the Book pen, we only have one battery, which is great. And the one thing we do recommend is just to make sure that you don't over-tighten the cap on the Pro 4 pen when you put it on. There is those batteries last a very long time. They're meant to be changed out, 3, 4, 5, 6 months at least, depending on how much somebody's using the pen. There's a video that we have in our slide deck that basically shows you the way to, properly open up the pen to do it. It's a simple quarter turn or slight turn twist. There's a battery that pops out, and then swap it out.
Yeah, it's really important if you do feel that you need to replace the battery in one of these pens, be very gentle with the pen. There's not a lot of material there, and if you twist it too hard, if you pull on it too hard, you can end up breaking it. Believe it or not, we get a lot of returns where people have done just that. They've twisted it too much and they've broken the connector in there. So be very careful when you're changing the battery in a pen.
They're looking at different designs of the pen. How can we? Because obviously we don't want to have to watch a video to know how to take the battery out. But they're looking at ways to prevent that type of issue. Sometimes when you're designing hardware, things like that just happen.
Another example would be students using pens, and they use them to stir their drinks when they're in class. So not kidding, we've had a number of pens sent back from a school system, and we took them apart in Redmond, and they had residue from Sprite, Coca-Cola, sweet tea. It was very obvious what was in there. So doesn't matter whose pen it is, you're gonna break them if you do that, right? So don't use them as a stirrer. We've put in the recommendation, might have to waterproof our pens. So that's just another common one. So,
chew marks.
Chew marks. Yeah, don't let your dog play with your pen. The last thing I want to talk about pen is just before Windows 10 Anniversary Edition, if you wanted to tweak the pen settings, what happens when I press this button? What happens when I push the barrel connector? Like when I press the barrel connector, I want my email program to open up. I don't want OneNote, or I want the old version of OneNote, not the modern OneNote. All of that was done through the Surface app that you could download, but in Windows 10 Anniversary Edition, we actually have the Pen settings built right into the settings. So you can go into the Windows 10 settings, and you'll see these settings in here that allow you to adjust and tweak the Pen. And it's a lot easier to do it that way than to have to download the app and sideload it to all your users and all that stuff. So
yeah, we added the Windows Ink Workspace feature in there, which allows you to do sticky notes real easily, get to them, and so that's a really nice feature.
All right, Scott's going to talk to you about deployment.
Okay. So this probably could be a whole separate session, but I'm going to go just quickly over the options for deploying Surface devices. We have a couple different options. We have a standalone tool called Solution to Deployment Accelerator, SDA, and that's a tool that I would recommend. It's a free tool. If you're just doing Surface devices and you kind of need to quickly maybe roll out 10 or 20 devices to some C-level executives, this is a good tool to use because it walks you through the process of getting the drivers, creating an image, and it's a lot easier. If you already are using MDT, to Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, to deploy or to create reference images, you can obviously use that. You know, we have, I'll talk about the drivers, what drivers you need, and you can import those in, so you can use MDT. And then obviously Configuration Manager, you can use that also to deploy Surface images. With the Surface drivers, an important thing to note is that we have two packages. We have a zip file of drivers and an MSI. The zip is what you would use for bare metal installs, so that's what you're going to import into MDT or Configuration Manager or any deployment tool. The MSI package is what you would push out to update devices that are already out in the field. So you can, like Todd was saying, you can deploy that out through whatever means you want. So it's important to note the difference between that. One little exception here, the Surface Ethernet drivers, we have the drivers for those tend to get updated quite a bit. And what we recommend here is that you use the Windows Update Catalog, and up on that site, and there's a link there in the presentation, if you just go up there and type in Surface Ethernet drivers, you're going to see the Windows 10, Windows 8 drivers, and that's where you can download the latest Ethernet drivers. Driver guidance with, and you know, we recommend this not with just Surface, but if you're at any piece of hardware, we recommend you use different technologies. If in the MDT world, it's called a selection profile, and what we recommend is, you know, target the drivers for that platform, for that device. Instead of creating an image with 4,000 drivers in there for every piece of hardware, during the deployment, like with MDT, you can set it up so that only the drivers for Surface get injected into that deployment. And the reason we recommend that is that we've seen some problems where, like Intel storage drivers, maybe for like a different platform, HP or Dell, that driver was written specifically for Dell or HP, and sometimes when those drivers, if they end up on Surface versus the driver that we would ship, you can sometimes run into problems. So we just recommend try to limit the amount of drivers you target at device.
Yeah, I think it's important. I mean, the same thing works in reverse, right? You don't want to necessarily take the storage controller driver for a Surface device and go apply that to a Dell laptop.
Yep.
You know, at best, you're probably not going to get great performance out of it. At worst, you might actually cause a problem that leads to you having to exchange that laptop. So, you know, it is more work on the front end in setting up your images, but the best practice to follow is that each image should be specific to the hardware you're deploying it on, at least when it comes to the drivers.
Yeah. Or use the make model of the device to determine which driver, you know, like
exactly.
The, you know, Surface Pro 3 or Surface Pro 4 or Surface Book, that's the model for each of those devices. So, you know, when I see model equals Surface Book, then deploy Surface Book drivers.
Yeah, we've talked to some customers. We had to have a lot of fun trying to figure out which of the 1,000 extra drivers they had in their image, you know, was causing the problem.
Yeah.
It's a very time-consuming task.
So this is kind of a boring slide. I put it in there just for when people download this presentation after the event or during the event. I just wanted to give you a list of, I did some homework for you, went out, and a link, those Go links are for each of the driver packages for each device. So I know they're kind of spread out. So I wanted to have just one list for, you know, you can reference. And those, the FW link is a way, like if we change the actual download, that FW link is never going to change, so that you can use that.
I'll show them what it looks like. Yeah. So when you go to one of them, this is what it'll look like. This is the Surface Pro 4 one. And if you go to details, it will give you the date it was published. And then there's a download button. And when you click on the download button, you'll see that there's an MSI file and also a zip file. And so depending on which one you want, you know, you need the MSI or the zip, you download that.
Just to answer it now, really common question we get, in the MSI and zip file names, there's that number, that's not a date. It may look like a date, but it's not actually a date, it's an internal build number. We're trying to find a better way to do that, but don't mistake it for a date. You want to actually look at the date published instead of that number in the title.
Yep.
One other thing when you're deploying the Surface, we obviously have the Surface app, and so a lot of customers want to have that as part of their image. The way you can download this application for side loading is through the Windows Store for Business, and then you basically can side load that using DISM or PowerShell. And we actually have a blog that kind of walks you through that whole process. And this would apply for any Windows 10 app you want to sideload is now we use the Windows Store for Business. And when you create an account there, log in, there's a checkbox to say, you know, show me offline capable apps, and then you can search for it. You know, if you want to, you know, let's say your devices don't have internet connectivity, but you want, you know, Adobe Reader on there or some other application, you can go up there and download the APPX package for it. And sideload it. These are just some links. We've tried to write up a lot of different walkthroughs for how to deploy to Surface. So, you know, how to deploy Windows 10 using MDT, how to manage Surface driver and firmware updates, step by step for the Surface Deployment Accelerator. I think there's even a lab here this week that will walk you through
there
that.
It is indeed.
Yeah, so that's a good chance to go try those out. We have a number of admin tools for Surface, so I just want to point those out. We have the Surface Enterprise Management Tool, or SEM, and that is for Surface Pro 4 and Surface Book, and that allows you to manage the UEFI settings for the device. So if you want to turn the camera off or turn the USB port off, you can use this tool to manage those settings. With Surface Pro 3, you have to use a different tool. It's the Surface Pro 3 firmware tools. It's different technology. With Surface Pro 4 and Surface Book, we actually wrote the UEFI BIOS, whereas before it was AMI, I think, or yeah, I forget. The Surface Data Eraser, so this is a tool you can download. You boot from a USB drive. And what it does is it basically issues a command to the device to do a secure wipe. That's something each drive manufacturer has a, you know, different way to do a secure wipe, and that's that tool issues kind of a generic do a secure wipe, and the drive does a wipe of the drive. So if you're gonna, you know, return a device back to us for warranty reasons, you want to go ahead and run that, and then none of that data is recoverable.
And it'll detect, like, the drive when you're running. Yep. It'll tell you this drive is found, and then do you want to erase now, and, you know, are you sure you want to do it, and it, you know, makes sure it confirms.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a very useful tool.
Then the last one, the Surface Diagnostic Toolkit, you can download this, and basically it runs you through a suite of tests on a Surface device. It's real helpful to run through to find any, like, obvious hardware problems with Surface. It will have you go through, it's a attended tool, so you have to be there. It doesn't it can do some of the tests automated, but others you have to go through it. It also gathers different logs from a service device. If you want to, gather the logs, if you want to troubleshoot somewhere on your own, it gathers the most common logs related to Surface. So that's a good tool to, you do a quick basic test on a device to see if there's a hardware problem with it.
Something we should say about these tools, we get feedback on these tools quite often from customers. That, hey, could it also do this, or this scenario is a little bit hard to deal with. We love that feedback. We are constantly evolving these tools. We're releasing new versions on a regular basis. If you guys do have feedback for us on the tools, please reach out to us. Whether you do that, if you have a Premier account, you can come through your technical account manager, come through your sales contact. You can even, if you call in a support case, you can talk to your support engineer about it. But let us know. Let us know how we can improve these tools, because we want to enable you to be successful in your environments. The only way we do that is by listening to your feedback.
And if you have ideas right now, come to the
Expo floor, talk
booth
to us.
And we'll
take them
we'll
back.
Be happy to write them down. Yeah, because we'd love the feedback. All right, so the last thing we have to talk about, which I have a little bit of time to do, is thermal. So basically, the gist of this, what I'm trying to get across here, is we often hear from customers, my device is too hot, or my fan runs all the time, and they're comparing it to something else that doesn't have a fan or has a very low speed processor, right? This is a computer. It's meant to do a lot for you. It's meant to do everything. It's meant to be your machine that does your work, that you can read your book on, that you can surf the web and do your email. It's meant to do everything from the easiest stuff to the most complicated things. And so, physics apply, right? So silicone, the faster you move data in silicone, heat gets generated. Heat gets generated, fan has to cut on. The hotter the device is, the higher the RPMs on the fan, which makes the fan louder. And that's going to be the same way, whatever computer you're using, right? The key thing to remember here is that, there is an international standard for touch temperature, the temperature at which you're required to turn a device off that a user has in their hands. It's up there on the slide. There's an IEC number. That's an international standard. We actually cut off Surface at a temperature lower than that on purpose for safety reasons to protect our customers. And so if you've ever seen somebody talk about, hey, I got the thermometer icon on my screen, that meant, your device was too hot, you tried to turn it back on, and it currently at that moment was exceeding the temperature that, the limit that we have set. It's not a very common scenario. Usually when this is happening, it's probably because you've got software that's basically causing your processor to run hot. So it's not a problem with your Surface, it's normally a problem with applications that you're running. So, you would use the same kind of troubleshooting you would use to say, why is my machine running slow? You're gonna, look at Task Manager, what's using the highest CPU process? Is something reading and writing from my disk nonstop? I might have to get into things like Performance Monitor and look at, Perfmon tools and see what's going on there. Maybe your antivirus is running a full scan in the background wide open and is, doesn't care if it's using all your CPU, You don't know exactly at that moment. So, instead of jumping to the conclusion and say, oh, my device must be broke because my fan is loud, that's not true. It's, software is running that's causing the fan to kick in. We want to make sure that you troubleshoot that, again, using all the tools. Scott mentioned earlier in the earlier slide the PowerCFG/energy switch. That's a really awesome tool because what that's doing is gathering data while you're using the device. So if you run PowerCFG/energy/duration120 and just sit there and do, work on your computer like you work on it normally, then it's going to track what is using the most power during that time, that 120 seconds, and it'll tell you basically, what's eating up your CPU. So.
So we're going to stop for questions here in just a second, but some key takeaways we want to make sure that you have. Thanks, Todd. First of all, we're listening. We love feedback. We want to hear about your experiences with the device. So for the rest of the week, come find us on the expo floor. We'll be down there after the session this afternoon. We'll be down there all week. Happy to talk to you guys about anything you have going on, whether it's with Surface, whether it's with other Microsoft products. It could be technical. It could be non-technical. We're happy to hear your feedback. We want to hear your feedback. leverage the salespeople that you work with. If you have Premier accounts, leverage your Premier technical account manager. And then, by all means, if you run into problems with our devices, call support. We have people standing by. I mean, it's kind of a cliche, but we literally have people standing by to take that phone call to help you get through that problem. So we want to help you guys out. We want to make sure that you're successful with our devices. Keep your devices up to date, whether that's making sure that people go up to Windows Update and get updates applied, or whether it's using the MSI to push those updates out to your environments. Keep your devices up to date. We issue updates frequently, and we do that because we're fixing problems. You know, not having an update means that you're vulnerable to those problems. So make sure your systems stay up to date. When it comes to deploying and managing your devices, make sure you're setting yourselves up for success. Use the best practices that we've shared, not just for Surface, but for Windows. You know, when you think about it, if you go buy 1,000 Surfaces, what you're really buying are 1,000 PCs that run Windows. So make sure that you're managing those appropriately. You know, you can save yourselves a lot of time and trouble later on by doing the right things up front. And then finally, take note of those troubleshooting tools that we've shared, the PowerCFG reports, the Task Manager, all that stuff that you have built into Windows that you can use to troubleshoot problems on your own, find out what's causing the behavior that you're seeing. At the very least, what that will enable you to do when you pick up that phone and call support, you'll be able to clearly articulate what's going on. We'll be able to help you that much faster. You might even be able to solve it on your own without having to call us. Okay, quick call out for Microsoft Mechanics. Have any of you guys watched Microsoft Mechanics on YouTube? I see one guy, if you guys have. If you haven't watched these yet, take some time and go watch them, because they're actually really cool. You can learn a lot just by watching the Microsoft Mechanics videos. We talk about all kinds of stuff. How do things work under the hood? How is stuff put together? It's really a good resource. It's absolutely free. It's on YouTube. You can look at it on your phone. So when you pull down the slide deck, grab some of those links and go take a look.
Yeah, I put one at the end there. That one wasn't on Microsoft Mechanics, but it's up on YouTube and with Ben Rudolph, and he goes through the building where they do a lot of prototyping for Surface. Yeah. So it's very interesting video. I was always looking behind them to see what's back there a lot, and the equipment we have for prototyping is pretty
amazing.
Cool.
They show you like the prototypes for the Surface Book hinge and some of the kickstands for Pro 4. They show you a lot of the early prototypes and stuff. It's pretty cool.
Okay, so we have about 2 minutes for questions, and in the interest of time, I'm not going to make you stand up and go to the mic, but I am going to repeat your question once you ask it. We'll start with you, sir. Okay, so the question is there any roadmap that we can share about a Surface Pro type device with LTE connectivity? So unfortunately, I don't have any information that I can share. I imagine that once we get closer to doing something like that, we'll absolutely make announcements, but we don't have any plans that we can really talk about right now. We are definitely hearing feedback from our customers that that's something you'd like us to explore. So I can assure you that it's being looked at, but whether that's next year or 3 years away, couldn't tell you. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
The modern connected standby, when it's keeping the network link alive, is that for a wake on LAN or is that for shooting updates
on the device? Okay, so connected standby, when we keep the network alive, why are we doing that, essentially? Like, what's the purpose of it? So the original design purpose of connected standby and having the network alive was to allow applications to go out and update. The idea was that when you wake that device up, you shouldn't have to wait for it to go download your email. It should already be there. So that was the original purpose. Now, as of Windows 10 Anniversary Edition, if you have an Ethernet connection and if you're configured properly with the right driver, you can actually do wake on LAN while you're in connected standby. That was not possible before Anniversary Edition. We had to get Windows to go make that change. But like I said, the original purpose was just to make sure that your apps could stay up to date and have the information available for you when you woke the device up.
Yeah, it was for modern apps, toast notifications, any Win32 apps are suspended. But like Dave said, go on a Surface Book, Surface Pro 4, Anniversary Edition, go click Surface Ethernet Driver and Device Manager, look at properties. We've added.
It says modern. Yeah, it's modern standby wake on LAN. It's one of the options in the Surface Ethernet driver. So yeah, if that's on, and you've got a Booker Pro 4, and you've got Windows 10 Anniversary Edition, then you can do wake on LAN on the Ethernet card. Yeah.
Okay. We have time for one last question. Yes, sir.
So on the DPI slide, you mentioned that you need a lot of fresh scaling or DPI issues. Is there a script or an API that can do that within Windows?
Unfortunately, so the question is, when you're dealing with DPI scaling issues, you can log off and log on to reset that and get it to work the way you want it to. Is there a script or something that can emulate that behavior? The answer is no, unfortunately. And that's not so much about what Windows is doing as it is about how the applications initialize. What happens is that when you log on to Windows as part of that shell setup, we go and we figure out what monitors are connected, and we store that information in memory. And then applications have to go read that information from memory and use it to figure out what they're supposed to do. A lot of older applications are written so that they only read that information from memory when they launch. And likewise, Windows is written so that it's only updating that information when you log off and log on. Now, we are looking at changing that behavior in Windows. And that's why we've provided new APIs in the anniversary edition for applications to use. So you're going to see improvement there over time. There are some things that we can do for applications, but there are other things that applications kind of have to do for themselves. The challenge that we have now is getting the word out to all those developers out there, hey, you need to go update your applications. So that's what we're trying to do.
And the Office team is very aware of Skype and PowerPoint, and they're working on fixes for that.
They told us we can't say when the fixes are coming, but they're coming soon. We'll just say that. There you go.
Yep.
You didn't hear it from us. All right, well, thank you, everybody, for attending. If you had additional questions or if you think of one later, we're down on the expo floor. Look for the Windows devices area. We're going to be there all week, so please come talk to us.
Yep. Thank you.